Welcome to Do Wonders, the podcast that highlights the incredible work and stories of the Century Autism team. I'm Timothy Yeager.
And I'm Lisa Cunningham. In each episode, we take you behind the scenes to meet the dedicated professionals who make a difference in the lives of our clients and their families.
Through these conversations, you'll get to know the personal journeys, the challenges, and the successes that truly define our team.
Whether you're part of the Centria family or just curious about the amazing work happening here, we're glad you're with us.
So join us in diving into the wonders of Centria Autism. Hi, everybody. Hi, Betul.
Hey, Timothy.
It's good to have you on the show.
Good to be here.
And live in person for Betul and I.
I know. I'm excited that there's someone here with me.
I'm really excited to have this conversation with you, Betul. Your journey at Century here and like your story prior to Century is one that I think a lot of people need to hear. And so I'm really excited to get into this conversation with you.
Cool. Let's get started.
For those people that don't know you, Betul, a little introduction on who you are and like what do you do at Centria?
My name is Betul. Anytime anyone says, tell us a little bit about yourself, I'm like, I don't know. I'm an area director of clinical services here. I've had a few different titles with the company. Outside of that, I'm an aunt, which is like my most proudest accomplishment in life right now. I'm a shopaholic and I have a crippling caffeine addiction. To me, in a nutshell.
I feel like you were ready for that. I don't know what to say. That was great.
We've had like a lot of new team members, and this is what I've been rolling with. Shopaholic, caffeine. I just added the I'm an aunt part.
Hmm. What's your caffeine choice?
Espresso. Lattes. Oh. That's something that makes me super HRE. Trying new lattes.
Really?
I'm like really upset. If they're not good.
You just go straight to the latte?
Yeah.
Do you like flavored lattes?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now, my hyperfixation is a honey cinnamon shaken espresso.
That sounds really good.
I don't know if I told you. Tiffany likes the, I don't know, I feel like a basic lady when I talk about like Starbucks drinks, but I like how I edited and said lady. brown sugar shaken oat espresso. But I
was on that kick.
Yeah, I've been making it from home. And so I made the cinnamon brown sugar simple syrup. And so I've been making it into lattes. It's been delicious.
Okay, I need the recipe to your syrup.
Yeah.
For sure. And also shaking the espresso makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
Is it like shaking it with ice?
Yes. It makes it so much smoother tasting.
Interesting.
It's probably similar to like a espresso martini. You get that little foam.
Yeah. You do. You get foam.
Just the same, right? Yeah.
So let's just jump in. Betul, I still remember our first time meeting and in our interview and just being blown away by a really dynamic person who had a very clear picture of what she wanted, very clear approach to like communicating what she wanted. And while that role that we had at the time wasn't like the right role for you, it was very evident to me that like I had to hire you and had to figure something out for you to do at Century. And I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about your journey to Century. And you know, like the decisions you made, the choices and how you really seem to like take grasp of your career and your professional development to get you on the right path.
Yeah, let's dive right in. I will never forget the outfit that I was wearing during our first interview. It was my olive green Lululemon outfit. And then I'm like, man, I'm being so disrespectful. The second interview, I was also in a workout outfit. I'm like, I have to work out after this. I need to make it make sense. No, but my journey into ABA, I stumbled upon it very much on accident. Didn't know what ABA was, never worked with kids with autism. I was in undergrad at Wayne State and someone I knew introduced me to like this company and I was like, okay, let me do an interview. And I remember the director asking like, what do you know about kids with autism? And I was like, nothing. I ended up on a case, fell in love with the kid that I was working with. My supervisor was very progressive. So very early on, I got exposed to Dr. Megan Miller's work. And ever since then, it was kind of like one of those aha moments where you feel like you're in, you're in the thick of it, you're doing all the things, but you want to see more progress. And you're like, there needs to be another way. So that was my first gateway into kind of delving into like more progressive interventions and kind of seeing what's out there beyond the clinic that I worked for. And when I was in undergrad, Dr. Hanley had some type of deal with Michigan Medicaid. So he came and he spoke to us. And ever since then, I was like, SBT, it makes so much sense. I don't want to do escape extinction. But the very, very first time that I was like mind blown by someone was one of Megan Miller's soapboxes about, you don't want to use escape extinction. What are you really teaching the client if they're throwing a shape when you're doing a shapes order and then you're giving it back to them, saying like, let's practice again. You're just teaching that behavior to fluency. And that just like blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And then she led me down the rabbit hole of PEAK and Early Start Denver model. And then I got on the wave of skills-based treatment and I was implementing all of the things to the best of my ability in my last company. I got exposed to ACT. So then I felt like I just really invested in my professional skills because it was almost negative reinforcement, if I'm being honest with myself, because I'm a pretty high anxiety person. I'm type A perfectionist. So anytime things weren't going the way I wanted them to go, it was like, I need to find a way. I really like value lifelong learning. So I would seek out CEU trainings. And then I felt like I hit a ceiling at my old company. And lucky for me, my really good friend Jerry and coworker is a person who's active on LinkedIn. I don't know how to use LinkedIn. but he said, Centria is hiring and they are doing something with SBT. And I was like, no way. Like, what is it? And he's like, it's a director for, I am going to mess it up. But it's a DFATI. Yeah. And I was like, that sounds so
cool. Assessment and treatment implementation.
Yes. So I was like, that sounds so cool. And the fact that the company is like just trying to take SBT on and investing, like I want to see what that's about. And do you remember what I told you during our interview? Mm-mm. I will never forget this because I'm like, wow, I just apparently don't have a filter now. But I was talking to you and I said, Timothy, I know we talked a lot about like ACT, PEAK, and SBT during our interview because those are the things I'm like super interested in. And I said, Timothy, if I'm being honest with you, if it weren't for the word SBT to be in like the job posting, I wouldn't touch Centria with a 10-foot pole, just because the reputation here was just not the best at the time. And I said, I want to like everything you're selling me on right now sounds amazing, but like, I'm having a hard time like believing it. And you said, well, we have Hillary Laney here. And I said, sold. I've done so many trainings with her. She's like a magical unicorn. And that's when I knew like the investment you guys were really making in the company. And that's what led me to Centria.
You know, part of that story, Lisa, I think I want to talk more about, which is Batul talks about like things not quite right at work or in her care and like what she had to do to like, and taking ownership of that to like find out how to better her own skills. And it's something I wish that we could, you know, like create a culture of, is that like ownership and responsibility. And I think it's, we'll talk more about Batul's journey at Centria, but it's done her well. And I think it would do a lot more people well.
Sure. No doubt. Yeah. I think that's interesting. That's something, you know, Timothy and I were talking about with you, is that like, you've really kind of taken the reins of your development. And it sounds like some of that's just like how you're wired and just personality wise. But I think some people might take the approach of like, finding that like I'm not doing well and want to kind of sit out of that. And some people I feel like even want to beat themselves up. Like there's something in their mind that they're like, see, yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think you saw it. And like to Timothy's point, it's like driven you to look at the problem from a different angle and say, what can I do differently? Like, how can I learn something? And as we were talking about you, imagine that we were talking about you. I think one of the things that's really like, I don't know, stands out about you is that you've really crafted your own development path. And that's so interesting. We'd love to talk about that too, because I think there's a lot to be learned from that is, you know, you really had a vision for what you wanted to do and kind of made it happen in a lot of ways. But I think there was some flexibility in that. And it just reminds me, it's like, yes, it's called self-development because it does start with like, what do you want to do? And how are you going to be actively involved in your own development versus like a leader developing you? And I think you're just like a great example of someone who's kind of crafted their own story. And we'd love to hear about that because I hope it's inspiring to other people to see that like you need to be an active participant in your development versus things falling in your lap because you drove a lot with where you are today. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that and just like how you approach it and like how you even set goals for yourself and work to achieve them? Because I think I would hope some people are inspired and want to hear more about it as well.
Like just for the audience who doesn't know Batul, like when you came to Centria, I'm pretty sure your roles prior to Centria, you were seen as like a peer, like coach and like support to people. Then you came into Centria and you took what was at the time a lead role, a lead supervising clinician role, which was in somewhat lateral in the sense of like you were supporting a team of people as their peer. Then you became a director, right? Also a clinical resident, which is one of our coaching and leadership programs. And now you're overseeing an entire area of Phoenix, Arizona. And that trajectory is one that I'm really proud of for you. And then on top of that, like you're one of our top performing area directors with data that is incredibly impressive. And so you should take a lot of credit for your development and your approach has paid off well. And I was hoping we could just talk more about like that approach and what's led you down this path.
Well, first off, I want to say I have the best team ever in Arizona. They're so amazing. They make it so easy. But for sure, I think I had to sit with a lot of discomfort in my first company. I love the way things were done. All of the programs were written out so like meticulously with so much detail. There was a process. Sure. Everything felt very clear. And then my favorite supervisor left. And then I was like, okay, I feel like I haven't learned anything in a minute. And I just really, really do value learning. I hate feeling complacent.
Sure.
And I find that anytime I leave a job position or a relationship or whatever it may be, it's because I feel complacent and like I'm not growing. So it's something that is somehow like ingrained in me. I had to sit with the discomfort of, okay, I want to be the best clinician that I can be. Mm-hmm. I'm starting my practicum soon. I feel like I have to seek out other opportunities.
Yeah.
So Jerry and I actually went to school together. And I'll never forget our first semester. Everyone sat in the same exact spots. We didn't have assigned seats. And I'm like, why is everyone sitting in the same spots? I need to talk to other people and know where they work.
Sure.
And see if they like the supervisors that they work with, see what their experience is, because I have to find like a new home. So I made it a point. I thought I was going to be like a trendsetter. I made it a point to sit somewhere different every single time. And
People were annoyed with you.
They were just like painfully shy. And I'm like, I don't know, like you guys, I need to find a practicum home. So the way it happened is I ended up talking to Jerry, and he mentioned that he worked with the person that hired me in my first position. And I was like, I loved working with her. Her name is Ashley. And I was like, okay, working with Ashley seems like a very good opportunity. Like I should pursue that. So then I put myself in a different environment. I'm also like a little bit sadistic. I've learned that anytime I'm uncomfortable,
yeah,
that's when I learn and grow the most.
Sure.
So I have to make that sacrifice and invest personally and professionally in myself to get to the places that I want to be.
Yeah.
So I ended up at a different company, and that's when I was heavily into all of Dr. Megan Miller's work. I think we were doing the 7 steps of, at the time, this sounds, I mean, I don't love saying this, but I don't even want to say it. Yeah. But I remember I put together it was like a practicum project. I put together a training for all the technicians. I don't know why I'm like this, but when I find something out, like I'm very passionate about disseminating it to everyone.
Yeah.
Because if I feel like it's like a little bit life changing to me, I'm like, you need to get on this.
Like, guys, I have to share this.
Timothy, when you go to Arizona in 2 weeks, you have to have the honey cinnamon chicken espresso. It's going to change your life. Like, I've just always been a person like that. So
what I'm hearing though, Batul, is like an understanding that to grow is to be uncomfortable.
100%.
And a willingness to put yourself into like uncomfortable situations mm-hmm. and be okay with that.
Yeah. And I think I also like reflect on the fact that my dad immigrated here. Mm-hmm. He had zero family. My mom talks a lot about how it was very, very sad when it was just me and her. My dad was at work and like they had to struggle and go through all of that to get us to where we are today. Mm-hmm. And they don't like regret it.
Yeah.
And so I think I've also just had that early on in my life, like as an example of like sometimes it's okay to struggle mm-hmm. in the name of like growing and accessing better opportunities.
Sure. Well, I think that's, I mean, that is key. So no growth is going to come from complacency or comfort.
100%.
And I mean, we hear about it. I certainly do from an HR perspective, right? It's mm-hmm. just like, man, I'm really struggling with this. I'm really going through it. Like I'm really, you know, and for me, that translates to like, you're being challenged. Like mm-hmm. most likely, especially with the right mindset, growth is on the other end of that. So it's truly, it's not to be like, oh, silver lining, but it's just the like, fact of it. If you allow yourself to be put into those environments, you will feel discomfort because you're learning something new. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you have a tremendous value of growth, right? So you want to learn new things mm-hmm. and you have a healthy tolerance for discomfort, as Timothy was mentioning. And I think those are really key because there's a lot of avoidance for discomfort just naturally, like we just talked about this before, mm-hmm. right? Like self-preservation.
Yes.
But it's kind of like a higher form of self-preservation to actually go through different experiences that are going to push you and challenge you because mm-hmm. then you're that much more equipped to like make it through something else, right?
Yeah.
I think talking about this though, this is an awesome perspective to have, but the days are what's hard. Mm-hmm. What's a time where you just felt like you were pushed to the limit and how did you kind of work through that? Mentally, because I think you have an awesome, like, optimistic view of that. But, you know, it's also through the confidence of knowing, like, yeah, the other side of that's a good thing.
There's no doubt that sometime in the last few months of traveling back and forth to Arizona.
Yeah. Laughing.
And the long days that you've had to have some, like, moments to yourself where you've had to, like, really, like, think through this and work through this.
Yeah. And then I like sarcastically tell people I'm doing it for the character development. That's why I'm putting myself on a plane and traveling 4 hours each way, however many times a month. No, actually a big moment is two big moments. I feel like in my career at Centria is Timothy. I think we both know that when I actually walked through the clinic that I worked at, I was like, wow, there's such a stark difference in what my expectation was. And like, we're starting from the ground up, it feels like.
Yeah.
And I was just letting this, like, I was sitting in the stress too much. And I remember I had a phone call with you and you told me to chill out. And I was like, okay, like, I'm chill. No, you gave me a lot of perspective because you were like, you just being in like a leadership position, I want you to look at everything like on a macro level. There's so many things that we do need to change, but we have to look at things like one thing at a time. So that was actually super, super helpful for me. I also think starting therapy was super helpful, just identifying things that like fill my cup, bring me joy. So when I'm in Arizona, like I just reconfigured my schedule for one of the trips to like not have one-on-one meetings when I'm on the ground, because I want to make sure that I have some time set aside to do some clinical overlaps because I know that that's something that fills my cup. I also know that I have to come up with a list of at least one new coffee shop to try because that's also something that brings me joy.
Yeah.
And a really, really, really big part is leaning on your tribe, like having a community. Sure. Like I had a support system within like just like within my company, like whatever company I've been at, I feel like I've had a support system. I was actually talking to Kaja recently and I said, as stressful as things get at work, as we shift with what like our focus on and everything, something that really, really grounds me is I have my tribe. I have my little group. I feel very psychologically safe there. And I also feel like negative experiences that I've experienced in the past has taught me to really appreciate that.
Sure.
So it's like looking at the things that are going well.
Yeah.
Like you're allowed to like tact and vent the things that are not going well.
Yeah.
The things that you want to change. But if you sit in it for too long, it's crippling.
Yeah, no doubt. And like there's some healthy amount of, you know, reflection, mm-hmm. right? And thinking about it. But I think you've done a couple things like really well. I think you have the right mindset, mm-hmm. which is huge, right? Because that can be such a limiting factor. And you touched on something that I think a lot of leaders don't talk about, but like is really key, where you have to make sure that, you know, you're investing, you're developing yourself mm-hmm. and investing in yourself and finding out, like, how do you give to a team mm-hmm. if you're empty yourself? So calling it like whether your cup is full or whatever you end up calling mm-hmm. that, but like you need to have passions and things that you're pursuing outside of work to actually help you feel like a whole individual, to be able to give yourself to everyone in your family, because work is not everything you do, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I love that third element of just having people that you feel like you can collaborate with, right? Like your tribe, your team, you've got these people that you feel like are in your court. I think those are really helpful things. Like trying to go something alone, mm-hmm. that's really difficult on like a gas tank that's empty. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a disaster, but it really is. I don't know. It's like aligning those resources. And I think you've done that really well and it's served you well, but
this sounds like another podcast we do called the HRE podcast,
right? Surprise. Like,
that is what that is some of the concept, right? It's like, you know, getting to a place of being happy, relaxed, and engaged.
Yeah.
And living in that space for a bit creates like the context for you to challenge yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And to do hard things. But a life of just doing hard things without that, you know, going back to those activities that fill your cup.
Yeah, then you'd be a sadist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Hard things to no end.
You know, Batul, one of the things that you said that I think a lot of people need to hear, though, is looking at your job, right, and arranging your job in a way that is both effective for you professionally and for you personally. Mm-hmm. Right? Actually, a lot of people have a lot more control of their job than they think about, and it's really important to arrange like the contingencies in your job to like allow you to be both effective and enjoy the work that you do. I was talking to John Austin about this a while back, and he was like, "Well, Tim, then just like do something different, like change your schedule." And he's like, "If you as a chief clinical officer can't do it, right? Like who could, right?" And he really challenged me to think differently about an easy perspective of falling into like a victim mindset to where you don't have control. The other thing that you said that I think a lot of people need to like fully like take heed of is it's very easy to like get face down in the weeds, the problems, the fires, the issues that are right in front of you and be blinded by like that and not see up above that and like be able to see the horizon that's behind that. Right. Or another metaphor analogy is, to drive, you have to look both at the rear view mirror and out the front window, right? Mm-hmm. And always just looking out the front never lets you understand like where you've come from, yeah. right? And the perspective that you need to have. And those two are really important pieces. My boss David always reminds me of that, like when I'm deep into a problem, sometimes you just come out of that problem, see what's happened, see the good that's happened, and then allow you to get right back into it.
Yeah. So Batul, one of the first times I think I met you was when I went to the Dearborn Center almost a year and a half ago. It's really funny because you were like, "Yeah, we do all these pilots." You basically were like, "If you know of any pilots, Lisa, you better put Dearborn first on that." And like, I love that because I'm like, "Oh gosh, you know, change." It's hard for people. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is interested in like messing with their day or doing something different, but. You know, we think about all the different things that we piloted that proved to be like so successful that now they're like company things. And Timothy and I were joking, I'm going to butcher this, but there's like, you know, right now a series of videos, whether it's TikTok or Reels or whatever, where it's like, talk about something that you like subconsciously do that you like learned. And I feel like there's maybe a good opportunity for us to talk about some of the things that we just do every day here at Centria, mm-hmm. but you were part of piloting at Dearborn and really like, walk us through that. What did you learn? How did it look different from what you piloted to what we're doing now that some people just may not even appreciate because it's the Centria they know. Mm-hmm. We're subconsciously doing it.
I think one of the first things is foundations of care. I was there for the first iteration where it wasn't foundations of care and it was just SBT that we were rolling out.
Yeah.
I still remember being very like, this is when I was just a baby. This I walked in and I wasn't leaning in with curiosity. And I was like, why is everyone stressed out? You're getting free mentorship from like Hillary. Yeah. It's a really big deal. but it's the mentorship that we provide. Like right now, anyone who comes through our doors is receiving some type of mentorship for Foundations of Care. And to me, like, that's invaluable. And the way it looked on day one when I was here is definitely not the way it looks right now. I think we've been through like three iterations.
Yep.
The first one was where we were doing SBT, like strictly you pick someone on your caseload. We're doing SBT. We worked with Lisa and Kaylin, the directors, to just do overlaps and make sure to walk people through up to like cap six. And then the second iteration, I hope I'm getting this all correctly, but the second iteration involved foundational plans, which was such a game changer. And that involved like doing all of the learning as a cohort and had like a little bit of like lecture to it. And then some writing of foundational plans together. And then the third iteration is when the clinical leadership resident position was kind of born. That one's my favorite one because you got to connect with people. And one of my favorite things to do ever, just in learning how to consistently invest in yourself while also being mindful of like a 40-ish work week versus like a longer week, is having working meetings. And that's what I felt like the clinical leadership resident position allowed us to do, was to take some of that burden off and not be like, here's a lecture, go do your homework, go write this on your own. But it was more, let me sit with you. We're going to talk about it. I'm going to help coach you. And then we're going to implement it with your technician, all while you're billing for supervision with your client. I think that was like a big thing. And so yeah, when people come through our doors now, they get mentorship, and I don't think they know that 2 years ago, this wasn't a thing everyone in the company was getting. Like Dearborn was the first clinic that we did this with.
You know, one other thing is like our whole org change, and then in the roles that we have in clinic as a clinical leadership roles, those started at Dearborn. I mean, people probably don't know that, but like your role, you and Jerry's role, you know, under Ian at the time, you know, really like you were the clinical leaders and he was like the operations director of that center, right? And like that was the first time over which we piloted this idea that we could have two separate leadership roles in the same center, responsible for two different things. And at the time we were thinking that was just a Dearborn solution because of the size of the center, but it's ended up being a whole company solution as well.
That's true. I forgot. Like even when we were, you're saying, when I hear you saying we were lead supervising clinicians, we were never leads. Like we were never
like DCS, a regular.
It was always a clinical DCS role. And I think we were like the first two to get the role or the title change of DCS. So yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Wow. Remembering that now, right? It's like that was the job description, right, Timothy, that we almost used. like we literally, I forget about that. That's a great call out, but that was like a great like pilot of that, which is now just how we operate, was figuring out, which is it's so interesting. Like as I am thinking about this conversation now, you know, the change, right? It's like that's scary. There's so many people who avoid the change or the conflict or the struggle, and like you wouldn't be where you are today and who you are today if that was your approach on it, right? Or even just like you thought differently about change. But instead it's like, there's a pilot, sign me up. Like there's a new job, I'll try it on for size.
I'll fly to Arizona every week.
Yeah, I know, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
I don't know. I just think that there's something in there that like is good for people to reflect on. That it's not easy, but it's obviously been something that has been a tremendous game changer for you, and just having that openness. And like, I think having that value of always wanting to learn and grow and try new things, whether it's like rooted in like self-development or, you know, career growth or whatever that is. I don't know. I think that's really cool. And I hope that you recognize like that not everyone has that. And it's something very unique about you. And we're really fortunate to have you on the team, Batul.
Thank you. I feel very fortunate to be on the team. I was going to say every time there was a role change, I did get the hang of, even when I was a BCB, I got the hang of how to make all of the things that I wanted to do for myself to like further develop my skill set work within my work week. So I was rearranging my work contingencies. Like I remember we had like a billable expectation slash a bonus. I would hit my bonus by like Friday at 10 a.m. and I'm like, okay, cool, I have the rest of the day, do whatever I want. And that like involved like doing some extra CEUs or like getting to like rewrite a program, do something that's not necessarily billable, but that I knew was going to help my clients and just like help develop my skill set. And I remember having a conversation with Ian where I was like, Ian, I'm working with my therapist and I'm trying to find ways to rearrange my contingency, make me feel a little less burnt out right now. And something I asked for was, I need one work from home day, because it's really hard to do some of the things when everyone's barging through the door and you want to help everyone and stuff. So that was a hack. And then my favorite Pilates studio opened up like 5 minutes away from the Dearborn Center. So I also was able to arrange my day to do like a workout at 9 a.m. or 10:30, come back to work and like be able to do all of the things. I think there's so much value in being able to change what your workday looks like so that it fits better for you. You're pouring into your cup and you're feeling energized so you can tackle all the issues.
Yeah.
And like work through all the barriers.
But funny about that is a lesson that Lisa and I learned. We met with like 75 BCBAs in the company. We're asking questions. And one of the questions we asked them about is their workday. Yeah. And, we have a really flexible workday for a lot of our employees to where they have clients that maybe receiving services from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And we thought, maybe a good solution to be like, all right, you work 8 to 4 or you work, noon to 8 and you can pick those shifts and we might pay a differential, differential for certain shifts. And I don't know, almost 100% of the supervising clinicians that we asked said, no, we like.
Emphatic no. Mm-hmm. They were like, don't do it. We like the freedom.
Yeah. We like the freedom. And so some of that degree, though, is like the ability to like work their life into this and like be able to carve out those opportunities. But between one thing I was thinking about, too, is like I probably missed the opportunity for this conversation when you're talking about that meeting that we had. But I do remember that meeting that we had when you came to me with all the, the worries that you had. And if memory serves me correct, it was like a legal notepad that had like 5 pages of just issues. And
it was in your office.
Yeah. And I think that there's an opportunity there that you probably may want to talk about, and I think should talk about, is you went from seeing all the problems to being like much more solution focused and like, where can you make a difference? Right. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that don't make that transition, right? That it's just easier to sit and be frustrated and just, be angry about like all the things that could be better versus like actioning against the things that like can be better and you can do. And have you noticed that shift in your professional journey?
Yes. And I credit you to it because I truly credit my experience at Dearborn and the conversations I had with you and Hillary, because it was like, I remember looking at Jerry and being like, oh my God, I don't want to be in this loop where it's like, here are all the things that are wrong and here's what sucks. Sometimes I have some toxic positivity too, where I'm like, all of the things are fine. It's all going great. But something you guys taught me was the importance of risk escalation, when to do it, how to do it. I know that we had some big asks and you were able to like help us refine the way you make a proposal, like effectively.
I want the entire center painted. I want an HR person on the floor. I want like all these things. And I'm like, but slow down.
Yeah. So I think that was super helpful. I think, and it's actually conversations I'm having with my own team right now is how we can all kind of like reflect on how we escalate risk and making sure to like do it in a more solution oriented way. I think that's so important and it's what helps us move forward. And it's what keeps people feeling better about the work that we're doing. And also it helps us avoid being complacent and stuck in the negativeness, like the negativity.
Can you give an example of that?
Of like risk escalation?
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe just like how you saw a problem, how you implemented risk escalation. So maybe how you would have done it.
Yeah.
And then instead putting it through the filter of risk escalation and being solution oriented, what that would look like, maybe a before and after the approach.
I think the before would be, hey, Timothy, so-and-so is failing at doing XYZ. Okay. I think the post is leaning in with curiosity, having conversation with the person, really trying to understand where they're coming from, what their perspective is, what their learned history is, to identify where like the break in communication is. And then being like, okay, I see what it is now. And then coming up with like a solution for kind of adding supports to help just fix the issue. And then I've almost adopted the, like, let's identify the problem. Let's talk to the person, work with them. How can we partner together to, it's very HR. Mm-hmm. How can we partner
it's
together?
So people oriented.
Yeah. It's also like aligning values. Like, yeah. What's your value? This is my value. This is the process sure. that you're currently using. This is what I see that we can maybe do differently. Yeah. Can we partner together to like come to an agreement? And then escalating it if there's no agreement or escalating it if I'm sitting in a CQOD call and Timothy's like, hey, Batul, the metrics didn't change. You said that you were going to talk to this person. They are going to change. But just driving accountability too. So I think it's like a two-prong approach where it's like you're escalating risk, coming up with a solution, but then you're also driving accountability to like ensure that it actually solves the yeah. issue at hand.
From like an outsider.
It's much more behavior analytic, right?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's more people and solution focused. So what I am hearing about that is like before it's like, hey, I've identified a problem and I'm going to tell my boss about it.
Exactly.
And now it's like, no, I've identified something's not working and I'm going to understand what's influencing that. Like what's going on with that person? Mm-hmm. Why is it happening? And maybe in that you're like, oh, I can actually solve it. Mm-hmm. Right. Or it's like, okay, well, maybe we need to flex on this or work on this, or maybe I need to show them how to do this one thing. I think that's a very practical way instead of, you know, just saying like, oh, great, I've identified it. Let me run that up the chain. Mm-hmm. And I hope it feels more empowering. It certainly sounds like it would feel more empowering.
For sure does. And you know what really changed the way I practice? I've always been, if you talk to any of my friends, they're like, you're too gentle and blah, 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 and all that stuff. Like, they're very.
I've never heard that about you.
What is it?
You've never heard that.
They think I'm just, they don't understand foundations of care. But I was just going to say, like, foundations of care has really changed the way I practice, not practice ABA, because I'm proud to say that I feel as though before I came to Centria, I was already practicing in a way that aligns with our foundations of care. But it's definitely changed the way I manage my team. Mm. I used to be too, not pushovery, but driving accountability was something that was actually like hard for me. And I feel like that might be surprising to you, Timothy. But something that really helps me or like kind of helps ground me is, yeah, making sure people are HRE enough. Like, am I not arranging the environment? Are the contingencies not arranged in a way that's supportive of this person doing their job effectively or not being miserable about doing their job effectively? And then also looking at things where this is risk escalation. I really want to partner with you, all that amazing stuff, versus this is an always boundary. This isn't a sometimes boundary. This is an always boundary. This is like the house is on fire. Like, this is not acceptable. And just kind of shifting with that, because before mm-hmm. for me, it was really hard to identify when something was a boundary and when we could be flexible about it.
You know, where this has really shined, Batul, and as an example of like the impact that you've had is, yes, you celebrate your team in Arizona is great, but they've improved significantly under your leadership. And I think taking that approach, you know, if you just think about the two standards that you've improved significantly on is the amount of clients that are receiving meeting our supervision standard and the ones that are meeting our family engagement standard. Those aren't problems that you brought to me. Those aren't problems that you escalated and were like, this is just an issue, right? Like you partnered with your leaders, you partnered with your team, you identified how to improve it and you're improving it. You'll come to me and say, I got a goal. I'm going to hit this, you know, by next month, watch me.
We're manifesting.
Yeah. And you've done it and you partnered with your team, right? Through some like difficult conversations as well that you've had to have. And at some point, this podcast is sounding like a praise Batul podcast. I'm just really proud.
Yeah, this is the Batul fan club podcast, actually. No. We'll see you next week. No.
Hey, Batul, what's a good day for you?
What's a good day for me?
Yeah.
Saturdays are great days. Going to Pilates and then going to get coffee and just going to a random store with my friend, like doing all that stuff with my best friend. That's a great day to me.
When you're flying back from Arizona back to Detroit, what's a reflection that's like, that was a good week or that that was a good use of my time. And I'm glad that I made that trip. Like, what are you thinking about when you say that?
Getting to connect with the people like on the ground, it's always different. That's a really, really big thing. I always say, anytime anyone asks me, like, how do you do it? And I'm like, doing it for the character development. But in all honesty, if I'm being very, like, if I'm going to be very honest with myself and with you guys, there's times where I feel absolutely miserable about it. And it's, I've been able to identify it's the flying back and forth. And I've been arranging the contingencies to now where I can't sit and watch a movie on a plane. I can't take anything to sleep because then I'm groggy the rest of the day. So like making sure that I'm doing work, because that's like the time I have to be kind of unplugged, but getting to sift through the 100 plus emails. So kind of like rearranging my contingencies to like support me. But I always say I love my time when I'm actually in Arizona. I don't like driving to the center. I love being at the center because I love seeing the kids and I'm like, I get to do clinical stuff again. But it's really connecting with my directors, doing skip level meetings in person with SCs, and getting to do clinical overlaps.
Awesome.
I feel like I appreciate just the amount of time, like you have figured out like the hack for you too, right? You're like, yeah. Oh, the hack for this, the hack, like you figured out how your team works and what makes them tick. You figured out you and what makes you tick. And I think that you are totally willing to set boundaries within all of those relationships that support what everyone values. And I feel like that's so refreshing, right? It's not like, oh, please work more. Like, but will you please just work a 60-hour work week? That's not it at all, right? It's just understanding people and what motivates them and creating an environment where they can be their best, yourself included. Like, it starts with you.
Yeah, I think Steve Hayes said this, like human suffering is inevitable. It's just like, how do we cope with it? Like, what are the things we do for ourselves to make it seem a little more manageable?
Sure. Sure.
Well, that's a dire way to end a podcast.
Yeah. You're like, well, life sucks, but.
Well, guys, the Sephora sale's going on.
Yeah.
Go get your stuff 20% off.
Well, Bajul, thank you for taking this time. I'm out of a, you know, busy day and a busy week. And I actually learned some things today. And I actually, to be honest, I was sitting back while you're talking about some of the things. And I was like, I could be a better leader if I would implement some of the things you're talking about.
Yeah, so. Ditto on that. You definitely gave me things to reflect on.
It's wild because you gave me a lot of tools, Timothy. That made me a better leader.
Thank you, Bajul.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah.
But I was hoping that there's one conversation I wanted to have about the term escape extinction.
Yeah.
Have you heard this used before?
You know, so a little bit, not, I want us to talk about it more because I think that, I'm very interested in like understanding more about the topic and dialoguing on it.
Yeah. So escape extinction in short really is like when you no longer allow someone to escape or avoid doing something.
Okay.
Typically in the face of like an interfering or challenging behavior that's occurring.
Okay.
In the technical term is like you remove the reinforcement for a behavior that was previously reinforced, right? And so if every time I tantrumed as a child, my mom said, you don't need to clean your room up, right? That's escaping, and that's negative reinforcement. She's removing a demand for me because I engaged in this tantrum.
Sure.
Escape extinction would be like, you have to, I'm gonna hold that demand. You have to clean your room up, right? Mm-hmm. And I may even go as far as like forcing you to clean your room up by like maybe physically prompting, like putting my hand on your hand and helping you like clean up your room. Why is this a conversation that Bajul brought up? Is this is a big shift from ABA of yesteryears and ABA today, and specifically the work that we're doing at Foundations of Care.
Yeah.
We identify what are things that we have to maintain and like not allow a child to escape. So if a child's going to run out the door.
Like safety. Right? Like, yep. Yeah. Safety, that's the first thing I thought of. Yeah.
Certain boundaries that we have to keep in place.
Sure. Yeah.
We teach our staff on like, what are those boundaries? And we come in advance prepared, like, what are those boundaries? And when we hold those boundaries, how do we do it kindly? How do we do it with empathy and validate their hard emotions? Whereas ABA of yesteryear would have probably, and not probably, would have been more cold and would have like not engaged in conversation when somebody was in trying to escape. you may have heard the term like planned ignoring, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's one extinction, approach.
Is it like asking someone to be like very uncomfortable with the uncomfortable thing just because it's like sitting in it.
Yeah.
Which is so hard. I mean, like, clearly when we talked about the new care model a couple of years ago, I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. Like, why is everyone not doing it? And it's like, it probably seems a lot easier to, if I may, like put a word on it that maybe shouldn't take a much more authoritarian like approach.
Yep.
Like, well, I'm telling you to do this thing and I'm the boss, so you're going to do it, versus being curious, like what Badul was talking about, and saying like, hey, what about the environment? Does this thing even really matter? Or do we need to be working on other things that could engage this person differently?
Yeah. So you completely agree. So our approach to care now is much more cooperative.
Yeah.
It's just compliance driven. And sitting in it, right? Like that is a difficult thing to do. And there's certain things that we just have to do. And that's where our changes to escape extinction have to be combined with skills-based treatment, or SBT.
Sure.
Because you also have to teach
what do you have to do instead?
Skills instead, right? Like,
yep, sure.
It's that combination which has shifted our focus, which is like, I'm not just going to force you to do things. I'm going to like help support you to do things you have to do. But the things that you don't have to do, we're going to take a step back, allow you to escape. And then we're going to realize and do some analysis, identify what are the skills that are missing here so we can help support and develop and change our behavior to help support you. And that is that process of escape extinction. We call it STEAM. So you set the boundary early. You tact what they're like feeling. You empathize with their feelings. You acknowledge it. You allow for non-judgmental time, and then you move on. We've created a framework that's actually provided some warmth and some compassion and caring to the process. Whereas before, it just didn't sit right with a lot of people of like being very cold and compliance driven.
Yeah. It's interesting, because not to make like a parallel, well, there isn't one, but this reminds me of like, you know, Dr. Becky, right? Talks about like sturdy parenting. Like there's some things that like just don't matter. And there's some things for safety. Like you're not an authoritarian figure, but there's going to be boundaries and there's going to be time where you're like, yeah, I get it. This is not what you want, but because I'm your parent and I love you, like these are the things we're going to do, but I'm right here with you on this emotions bench. And like, I get it. And when you're ready, we can move on to the next thing.
There's a lot of crossover with Dr. Becky.
So I feel like I totally get this from an ABA perspective, and I feel like I can understand it thinking about parenting. But if I think about the workplace, can you maybe give me an example of escape extinction in the workplace and then what to do instead?
So I think that maybe a trivial example comes to mind when it's like you have people in conflict in a work, and like maybe their solution is to work at a different location or move.
Which we hear sometimes. Yeah. Like I just don't want to be with a supervisor.
A different supervisor, right?
Okay. That's escape. Yep.
That's escape, right? And so like maybe there's probably times where that's warranted.
Sure.
But if there's like a communication deficit, if there's like just like an inability for people to work together, that things you have to learn how to do, like it's probably a better solution to like teach those skills, right? Mm-hmm. You're not always going to get along with people that you work with. There are going to be times when you're working with someone that like you don't get along with and you don't know how to get along with. Mm-hmm. And that's a skill you have to learn, right?
Yeah.
And so we may honor the escape, or we may sit there and say, you know, this is a boundary that we're going to keep. And here's some skills that we're going to work with you on, right?
Yeah.
I've been talking on LinkedIn recently. I talked about, you know, an approach to this where there are many moments as a leader where I feel incredibly uncomfortable. There are meetings where I feel uncomfortable, right? Like when we're working through things that a solution's not, readily available. I'm just going to have to work through it and kind of like be clumsy and like try to figure out like what's the best thing for us to do. Those are moments I want to escape. Mm. Right. And
yeah.
And in the past, I allowed myself to escape those, but like reflecting back, it's more like, what are the skills that I need to do in those moments I need to have? One of them is just tacting the fact that I feel uncomfortable and like, let's just like, see if I can work through that.
Sure.
Those are moments where like I am using escape extinction on myself to not allow myself to escape.
Yeah.
The question that I have that I don't necessarily know the answer to is this, like, I have an idea. We were just talking about this yesterday.
Okay.
You and I, weekly report outs. So I have,
yeah,
let's just dig in there. Like, I have a requirement with my team that, like, they need to do a weekly report out for me. We identified that, like, Friday evening report, when I'm asking them for, like, Friday day of data, is a hard thing for them to achieve.
Right? Like, okay. Sure.
Because multiple time zones, they might be quitting and then work is still occurring for the day. Sure. That was an unnecessary boundary that I identified for me holding. And so there's a solution, right? So it's like, yes, I'm going to keep those, that boundary of, like, you have to do this report. However, we're going to escape the situation. Like, let's figure out, like, what the right thing is for us to do. And the right thing is, like, we're going to come to a trial of, like, well, write me a report that's Friday through Thursday, right? Like, turn into me on Friday, right? Include Friday through Thursday data instead of Monday through Friday data. And we'll see if that's a better solution for us to work through that doesn't get us in a position to where we're not meeting the expectation.
Got it. I think that's really helpful. And a lot of this is, like, what kind of what Batul talked about, right? It's like, okay, having curiosity, what's going on, right? And instead of just, like, saying, yeah, okay, yeah, it's not due, escaping that. It's, no, hey, the business still needs this, but there's got to be a better way. Let me be curious. What's the roadblock? Oh, the roadblock is that you might not have the data to turn it in on Friday by when it was needing it. And so you might have been working on the weekend, which I don't want you doing, right? That's not, that shouldn't be the expectation. And so instead, it's creating the environment where they can meet your expectation and not have the discomfort, right?
What our team members will tell you about removing the demands, especially in our care model, is that it creates space for them to actually do the analysis, to figure out and be curious of why these things are happening. But if you continually have an approach of just, like, forcing compliance and making things happen, that doesn't necessarily always create the space to understand why things aren't happening or there's a challenge to those things that are happening.
Yeah. So how do you connect that for a leader who's trying to say, like, hey, I have this deliverable?
Yeah.
And they're bumping up against it. And if you want your team to solve that problem, like, what's...
Yeah, I think...
And you know, I think it's kind of like, in some ways, and I want to hear your perspective, but I heard from Batul, it's like, hey, well, I'm going to dive in and understand the problem. Because sometimes there's a time and a place to empower your team, right? And then there's a time where it's like, oh, I could see it. But maybe give me an example of when you would empower your team in that, but still get to the same outcome where the deliverables met.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. One is what you heard Batul say is assuming best intent, right? Like, behavior analysis is inherently humanistic. Mm-hmm. And that it takes a perspective that people are only doing or engaging in behavior that the environment is creating conditions for. Mm-hmm. And people aren't inherently lazy or people aren't inherently bad. They're just acting in ways in which the environment is, like, reinforcing. And one is taking a step back and identifying, like, well, what are the root causes and what are the things that are creating conditions for this behavior to occur? You can brute force things, right? You can just hold people accountable. And generally the solution for those problems is people just work harder and work longer. Mm. That's just not a long-term sustaining thing. Those are what we call negative reinforcement contingencies, where people are just doing things to avoid things from happening. And those don't sustain long-term.
Sure.
So the performance in those contingencies will drift and decrease over time. One of the things that I've been working with my team on is identifying what the goals that we want to achieve and then empowering them to figure out how to achieve those goals and not necessarily, like, managing all the steps within that they need to do to achieve those goals. And so, for example, we came to a solution today with one of my team members, which is like, I just need to know, like, what's happening within your department so I can better support you, better advocate for help within our executive team and really celebrate the work that you're doing. How can I achieve that? And then the solution came up, well, like, getting to this information to that includes Friday data is really hard. But if it was Thursday, you know, Friday through Thursday data, that'd be a whole lot easier for me. And so by partnering versus, like, being authoritative, it helps get us there.
For sure. And I think some of it is like the onus is still on a leader to understand where their team member is within that journey. Yeah. Like some people are going to have been able to grow and develop and be comfortable enough in the role to be able to recommend a goal, right? Or recommend what they would do differently. And so, I don't know, I think my advice to leaders as I think about this is like, know your team and know where they are in that journey. Because yeah. some of them, if they just started a new role and don't have that confidence yet, you might have to model the behavior first.
Yeah.
And then you can start to see them make some of those decisions on their own.
Starting from a position of why.
Yeah.
So a lot better. Like here's an example. I was talking with Dr. Carrie Milico around some data needs that we had. And Zach Morford's on our team. And I was talking to Zach and I told Zach exactly what I needed, mm-hmm. but I didn't tell him why I needed it. Right. And why I needed it. And when you just like, when you communicate with somebody, you tend to think that like what I'm saying is what you're hearing and what you're understanding, right. As if like,
or that we have shared information as a knowledge set basis.
Right. Yes. Like communication is just like me taking my information and putting it into your head. Right. Where it's like, what I'm communicating is based off of my history. What you're hearing is based off of your history.
Absolutely.
And those are vastly different, right?
Sure.
And without communicating the why, he did exactly what he thought I asked them, right? Mm. Brené Brown talks about painting done, but by not painting done, not saying like how I was going to use this data, there's some things that can be missed. There's some context that can be missed.
Yeah.
I'm saying that because when you're talking with leaders who may not be there or are on a journey that like needs a lot more support, like starting with the why starts to help and understand, help them problem solve on how to get to the actual solution.
Sure. Sure. No, I appreciate that. I think that's like a helpful thing to reflect on and very, very much related to the discussions that Batul has had.
Like a weekly report out, for example, like, it's very easy for someone to say like assumption could be like, you're just wanting to see if I'm working that week and like justify that I worked. Right. Mm. Well, that's not the why that I have. The why that I have is that I want to know what you're doing and like where you're like challenged are so that I can help support you. Right. Mm. And I also want to celebrate this.
Exactly. I was going to say, celebrate. So both of those things,
but without that why,
I could feel like you're very much just, prove your paycheck from last week.
Yeah, so that's the last thing that I would want.
Absolutely.
That creates conditions for people to escape, right? Like that.
Sure.
Talking about escape is that connects the two. So.
Yeah.
All right, Lisa.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, good talking to you again. Have a great day.
And that concludes another episode of us telling the stories of our incredible staff and their work to support our powerful mission. Until next week, do wonders.